The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good evening. Merry Christmas. We say that here on this show. And welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Happy you joined us tonight at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Our final show before the Christmas holiday. Thrilled to have you with us where we love to annoy the left. It's sort of a Yuletide passion. Pleased to have you with us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach me at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Got a great show for you this evening. Former presidential legal advisor John Eastman will be with us to discuss how Trump and conservatives have been victimized by lawfare. Wichita Mayor Lily Wu will be live with us here in studio here at the bottom of this hour to talk about some of the recent activity with the Wichita City Council, including this week's illegal camping ordinance. We'll talk with Denitri Herbert about her campaign for chair of the Kansas Republican Party and the recent news that the Kansas GOP's 2025 state convention may be held all the way out in Goodland. Hope it doesn't snow. Bill Pasco from Tea Party Patriots Action will join us to discuss Joe Biden's attempt to sell off parts of the border wall. they're on the way out. Do as much damage as they can. And we'll review the recently released record-setting abortion statistics released by the state of Kansas with Danielle Underwood from Kansans for Life. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. Real quick, a special Merry Christmas message to Teresa out in Kingman. I had the pleasure of speaking to the Kingman County GOP last week, and Teresa was, we met in the parking lot, and I love it when I have an opportunity to meet and greet my listeners. And it was a great time out in Kingman, and I wanted to wish a very Merry Christmas to Teresa.
And a Merry Christmas from me as well.
Right. You're a Kingman guy.
I'm a Kingmanite.
Kingmanite.
I just made that up.
So. Well, hey, it works. But anyway, Merry Christmas, Teresa. It's a pleasure to meet you as well. So, all right, folks. So this, you know, last week we did our annual 12 days of Christmas. So tonight I want to help you out. I want to give you some advice. Christmas is a special time to come together with friends and family and celebrate all we have to be thankful for. However, this process becomes very difficult when a woke liberal family member crashes the Christmas party. So here at the John Whitmer Show, we wanted to share with you a few tricks for how to survive the holidays when woke liberal family members join the festivities. So first off, you know, remember that much like plants need water, liberals need a safe place to survive. So it's important for you to move all your conservative books and memorabilia from the house to make sure that they feel welcome, because we don't want to trigger them. So put away all the MAGA hats and the Reagan biographies so that they feel welcome. But many things about Christmas can be triggering for liberals, so make sure you prepare yourself not to microaggress them during this stressful time. So we wanted to give you 10 things, handy tips, to help you deal with a liberal family member at the holiday season. So number one, avoid any mention of the word Christmas. Instead, say holiday season or winter solstice celebration. Christmas, after all, is a microaggression for liberals, while seasonal observance is gender neutral. It's non-denominational, non-binary, and free of any dangerous capitalist underpinnings. If you must mention Christmas, refer to it as that time when people exchange socially responsible, eco-friendly gifts and redistribute wealth. That's easier for the snowflakes to handle. Number two, here's a big one these days. No red hats allowed. A red hat, especially a MAGA hat, is an immediate trigger. Even if it's just a Santa hat, that red color can evoke feelings of oppression and the patriarchy, so opt for a rainbow stocking hat instead. Perhaps one stitched by an illegal immigrant, or pastel-colored beanies would be even better, as it's a neutral shade that promises unity and harmony in our woke society. Bonus points if it's made of organic, cruelty-free yarn. Number three, don't mention family. The concept of a nuclear family is so passé anyway, and let's not even bring up traditional values. Say chosen family instead. That way you can include everyone from your neighbor who identifies as a vegan to your friend who's busy self-identifying as non-binary or a Christmas tree or a Yeti or something like that. Number four, no silent night or joy to the world. Christmas carols can be problematic. Silent night could reinforce silence as a tool of the oppressive masculine patriarchy, while joy to the world might exclude those who feel oppressed or feel like there's a world domination by men. Opt instead for a reimagined carol like Everyone's Feelings Matter or Holidays Are All Equal. And for God's sake, under no circumstances can you ever play that 1940s classic Baby It's Cold Outside. Liberals believe it started the Me Too movement, and that's a major trigger for many of them. Next, avoid any gifts that could be construed as too materialistic. That fancy gift card, it's capitalistic and exclusionary. A pair of socks made from recycled plastic instead, that's the way to go. Or offer a book by a marginalized author that includes a certificate for consciousness-raising workshop in a gift bag. A hemp gift bag, of course. Next, don't even mention Santa. Santa Claus is a patriarchal figure who promotes body shaming by expecting individuals to leave milk and cookies out for him, but only him. I mean, why does Santa get to eat cookies, but we can't? Instead, tell the kids that the great gift giver, a gender-neutral, non-binary, eco-friendly gift exchange facilitator, will be arriving via sustainable sleigh powered by wind energy, and he will be bestowing gifts upon them. Keep Christmas decorations inclusive. That beautiful Christmas tree, well, it's not inclusive. Let's opt for a decorative evergreen equality plant adorned with colorful rainbow-colored ornaments that represent every culture, gender, and ideology. No stars or angels, heaven forbid, can't have angels, though, because those are religious symbols, and we must respect every belief system, so go with a universally neutral sunburst or something like that. Be careful with your holiday meal. No Christmas ham, that's triggering. Pork is problematic. In its place, you should serve an assortment of locally sourced, gluten-free, non-GMO, dairy-free, cruelty-free, and sustainably farmed plant-based products, like tofu, for example. Do not mention anything related to patriotism. Christmas isn't about the flag or American values. These are associated with oppression and imperialism. Instead, host a discussion group on the importance of globalism, and for whatever you do, don't mention America and greatness. And finally, Remember to offer an apology before anything starts. You should begin by issuing an apology to anyone who may feel triggered by the mere presence of your holiday gathering. Acknowledge the trauma that may be associated with Christmas decorations, carols, or even the scent of pine. Make sure your apology includes a disclaimer that all activities are optional and that participation is absolutely voluntary and free of judgment of any kind. Because after all, we want to be fair, equitable, and inclusive. Because anything else would, of course, be not appropriate to not include everyone in our Christmas celebrations. Here's wishing you a winter solstice celebration or seasonable observance. Best of luck to you. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk with Denadri Herbert about her campaign for chair of the Kansas Republican Party and the recent news that the 2025 GOP state convention may be held in Goodland. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. AFP believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. It's a community of millions of concerned citizens just like you, advocating for solutions based on proven principles to tackle the country's most critical challenges. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And, of course, while you're online, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, it looks like we finally know when the Spring Kansas Republican Party Convention will be held. It'll be the weekend of February 28th and March Saturday. That's the Friday the 28th and Saturday, March 1st. The where has been kept a secret for some reason. It looks like it's going to be, for some reason, I don't know why, in Goodland, Kansas. Maybe Denadri will tell us. And with us now is Denadri Herbert. She is, as far as I know, the only slate. She's the running for chair of the Kansas Republican Party. Denadri, thank you for joining us this evening, and I have wishing you a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, John. Thanks for having me.
Oh no, my pleasure. So maybe you can answer. Obviously, we all know that the party rotates the location of the conventions through the four congressional districts. This time, it's in the Big First, but that could be Goodland, but it could also be Hayes, it could be Hutchinson, it could be Salina, McPherson, where it's been in both of those cities. For that matter, it could be Lawrence. Why
right.
Goodland?
Your guess is as good as mine. As you know, I've worked on three major statewide campaigns, and I love going out to Western
yep.
Kansas.
Like I've been there myself. Western. Yep.
Yeah, oh, I know you have on the bus tours.
Yes, you have ridden on the bus that I've driven out there twice now. Yes, you know.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But it doesn't make sense to do it in Goodland. It's our population centers in Kansas are obviously on the eastern half of the state. I would love to actually have folks out to Goodland, but in the winter when they close I-70 regularly between Salina and Denver, it just doesn't seem smart to have a winter meeting in the middle, at the end of February, early March, when high risk of storms that will close the interstate, a meeting that we must have per our bylaws, have 180 people minimum, that's the size of the state committee, traveling out to Goodland. And I looked through the delegates who have been elected so far, and in the first district, which has 39 delegates, it looks like four are within a half hour, four delegates and alternates. I think one actual delegate and three alternates are from within 30 minutes of Goodland, and everyone else is from further away. And almost everyone else, like the vast, vast majority, is from 5 to 6 hours away. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a 5-hour drive from Wichita. And, then you've got folks in Pittsburgh. You've got obviously Johnson County, Dodge City. No matter how you spin it, it's not a convenient drive. And you're right. Weather could be an issue, which then begs the question, is this designed for, and I'm maybe a cynic, maybe I'm just being cynical here, pessimistic, but it seems like there's also almost an attempt to suppress voter turnout, which is ironic considering Mike Brown ran on a platform of election integrity.
Well, I don't want to guess anyone's motives, but I don't see the logic in doing it there at this time. I will just say that. It doesn't make sense. And I even think, you know, I love the convention every year. It's a great opportunity to connect with old friends and to make new ones. We often have a lot of folks who are just new to the party, starting to figure out how to get involved and what they can do and meet the people and get to know our elected officials. And I wonder, we always have a big dinner, the Bob Dole dinner. They bring in a speaker.
Right.
They're going to fly them into Denver and then drive them 3 hours in. It just doesn't make sense. And then our allies, like Kansans for Life,
the lunch,
Eisenhower series. Usually try, these different groups try to do some things out there. I'm not sure there's venues that will allow us to do all of those things. It might be a great location for a summer meeting, but I'm not sure it's the best place for an annual convention.
That is a question. I don't know if there's a facility that can accommodate, because you're right. We do. Yes, there are only 200 or so delegates, but you get a lot of people who also attend. You've got media that attend. There's also folks that just like to attend the convention. I've seen them get upwards of 300, 350 for the banquets, the Lunch for Life. You mentioned Kansans for Life. Oh. They do the Lunch for Life. That can get a big crowd. And yet, I don't know if there's a venue out there. I don't know what the hotel accommodations are like out in Goodland. And again, you're right. We don't want to speculate as to motive here, but it's just interesting. I'm hoping there's time to change it. There's still time to correct it. Nothing's written in stone. There's lots of places else that we could do it, even if they just moved it to Hayes or someplace in Manhattan.
Right.
But hopefully there'll be pressure brought to bear to change it. We're talking with Denidre Herbert, who is a candidate for the state chair of the Kansas Republican Party. Let me ask you about that, Denidre. I know, again, you've got one person from each congressional district. We all know who you picked from the fourth congressional district. A good buddy of mine, I got my start with him, is Andy Hoosier, correct?
That's correct. Andy's great. And I think he has a radio show on a competing station.
He does, but we still love him.
So folks can maybe catch both shows or listen to, you know, catch the internet version if they're so inclined, instead of missing a show on their favorite station. But yes, so you know Andy Hoosier. And then the rest of my team is Amanda Schleyer. She's fairly new. She's been working on rebuilding the party in Hayes, so in Ellis County. She's the vice chair there. And then Roger Lomshek is my treasurer.
Okay, I know Roger.
He's from Pittsburgh, and he's a wealth of knowledge, and he has been instrumental in helping rebuild the party in Crawford County. Crawford County, for those of you who don't remember, was blue as much as, you know, as recently as 10 years ago. And they slowly picked away. And I think this last election, they finally knocked off their last countywide Democrat. So they have flipped that entire county from blue to red. And so I'm excited to have him on board and share with the rest of us across the state what they did, how they did it, best practices to do that in some other tough districts. So.
What's your goal? As far as I know, I have not heard of, and I don't know if I think there's, we have, the Sedgwick County hasn't done our reorg yet. We do that. I believe it's the 4th or the 8th. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
I have the 4th on my calendar.
Yeah, 4th. That's right. It is the 4th, Saturday the 4th. I've seen the slate, so I think I'm delegate, but what I have not heard of anyone else who is running for chair. Have you heard of any opposition?
I have heard rumors. And then Chairman Brown has, in the last couple of months anyway, though not in the last few weeks or so, he has often said in his Friday file that in his next term he will do XYZ. But as far as I know, he hasn't formally announced plans to run again, and he hasn't announced his slate or if that would change if he does run again. I've also heard rumors of folks thinking about it. You know, recruiting folks are thinking about it, but as far as I know, none of them have gotten off the ground. So we'll see. Well, it would be nice to be elected by acclamation, but I'm willing to run my way through the tape and do the hard work to get there if I have a challenge. So.
Well, that's the way you every election has to be. You run like you're 5 points behind, as they say.
Exactly.
If folks are interested, if they have questions for you, if they want to know how you'd handle a particular thing, if they've got questions, they want information, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
I'm going to say friend me on Facebook. My name is spelled D-A-N-E-D-R-I. I'm probably the only one. The last one's Herbert, if you need a last name, but Dimitri Herbert. You can ask me questions on the back end of Facebook, and I will return your friend request if you just send me a note saying, hey, I'm an interested Republican and want to get involved. That's one of my high priorities. If I win, I want to bring in new voices, fresh blood, rejuvenate us. I mean, we're obviously the Republican Party is in awesome shape. We want a supermajority. We've got the presidency. But we've got a governor's race to win, and I really think that President Trump is going to bring more, you know, build our coalition, and I want to be a part of that. I want everyone to feel welcome and have a place and know what they need to do to get involved. So,
well, Dimitri,
however I can.
I wish you all the best, and tangentially to that, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And, of course, give my best to your boss, if you will, please.
I will do that. And hey, John, you have a Merry Christmas, too.
Likewise. Thank you again. Best of luck to you. We'll take a quick break, and then Mayor Lily Wu will join us live in studio to talk about some of the recent activity with the Wichita City Council. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I guarantee you my wife will text me now that we've played that song. Did you miss a part of last week's John Whitmer Show? Don't worry about it. We got you covered. We post clips from all our shows online. We also post single hours, segments from each episode, as well as highlights. You can find all of that on links to it on our Facebook page, as well as all you have to do is download the Always Live free Odyssey app to get started. And, of course, while you're there, just like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and through social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, it's that time of year. Want to remind you, we are looking for sponsors for the John Whitmer Show. If you are interested in sponsoring the John Whitmer Show in 2025, you can email tony@knssradio.com. Speaking of which, don't forget, starting in January, one Sunday a month, we'll be broadcasting live from Topeka. That starts January 12th, thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. Well, the Wichita City Council has been very busy lately, with multiple late night and record-setting long sessions. With us now to recap some of their most recent work is Wichita Mayor Lily Wu. Madam Mayor, thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining us.
Merry Christmas to you and yours.
So let me start with what just the most recent, which is the I want to make sure I call it what it, the illegal camping ordinance. I actually watched this. I was at my office and I put it on in the background. There were some interesting comments that came from the floor, and I was glad to see there were a few conservatives and business owners that came out to express the other side, but there were also some from the wailing and gnashing of teeth crowd. But really, this had to be done. But one of the things that I appreciated that you and Dalton and Becky Tuttle even pointed out was this isn't, you actually lowered the fines. You actually made this less harsh for the homeless, while at the same time protecting businesses.
So a lot of folks didn't know this, but the illegal camping ordinance has been around since 2013.
Right. It's already on the books.
Yes. So this is really a revision to the 2013 ordinance. So the original ordinance, the one that's still in effect at this current moment, allows for someone to have a 72-hour notice before their items can be removed. Now, the new ordinance or the revised ordinance allows for 48-hour notice, so a reduction in the time, as well as the places that are of high public safety concern. That's in front of sidewalks, in front of doorways.
Overpasses, things like
underneath that. Underneath bridges. Exactly. Playgrounds, the new multi-agency center. Those will get immediate cleanup. But when we say immediate, it really means an officer will talk to this individual and say, hey, there is a shelter available. There are beds available. You need to go there versus camp out here in front of a sidewalk. So I think people didn't understand that part. The other part is about penalties. Now, the current ordinance allows for $500 fine. This new one or revised one lowers it to $200. In addition, you can use community service to pay off that fine. So it really allows for that individual to have accountability, but also allows the judge to have more freedom. An individual does not have to pay the $200 fine. It could be a $0 fine if the judge deems that
up to the discretion of the judge.
Correct.
And that's the way it should have been. And, you know, people, I watched a lot of the footage, and I think they were really just trying to, frankly, play to your heartstrings. And this is a tough decision. And I remember listening to Dalton talk about, and he's, I know Dalton very well, and I know he's a person of faith, as are you. And both of you talked about, you know, this is a tough decision. I know you and I talked about this. You prayed over this decision because it's not easy. Nobody wants to throw these people out or clean the streets.
And that's not the intention.
No.
The intention is not to do sweeps. This
right.
is not an intention to get people really. What it is meant to do is to remind people that we have a new shelter
right.
that has 266 beds available. There are beds available in the community, and we're trying to connect those individuals to get indoors, because I don't believe it's compassionate to see individuals
to let them be
in
outside.
This cold
no.
weather just living outdoors like this when there are shelter beds available.
Yes.
And again, the city has spent a record number of dollars. Nearly $13 million has been invested into this facility that will allow for not just sheltering 24/7, but also connection to resources. So there are lots of nonprofits in this community that do great work. Union Rescue Mission is a great example. Union Rescue only focuses on men, but they allow for sheltering as well as transitional housing. So transitional housing allows for 3 months to 6 months of programming to really get that individual back connected to resources, training, and then have the opportunity to become an individual that can get a job in the community. And so we need sheltering, we need transitional housing, and then we need affordable housing. So we do need to encourage more housing in our community. That is what's lacking in the community, but this is just one step. So
right.
I think that this illegal camping ordinance was just one piece of that puzzle. We have heard it from community that homelessness is one of the priorities that they want us to help be a part of. And so we're trying to play our part in helping with having a compassionate sheltering piece, but also helping with the enforcement piece to really get those individuals to those shelters.
Well, you have to, and you have to also be mindful of the businesses and their rights to not have folks camped out in front of their businesses. But I also like what you were saying there about it's not just to help out, it's a help up, helping them to transition to permanent housing, to a job, to so that you're trying to do more than just move them along.
Oh,
you're
absolutely.
Trying to move
this
them
is
up.
A hand up.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
The multi-agency center, it's really a navigation piece, and that will be coming along. Right now, the shelter piece just opened up about 3 weeks ago,
right.
and they're already wanting to work with partners. One of those partners is Project Hope. Project Hope helps connect people to resources, and they will have a presence inside that shelter. So the more organizations that come on board and get inside that building to connect with these individuals to help them, again, launch into what they need in their lives, whether it's, you know, if it's mental health needs, drug habilitation needs, there are going to be resources that are going to be inside that MAC.
I know, you know, we're talking about a lot of expense related. By the way, we're talking with Wichita Mayor Lily Wu. I know you in particular, and Dalton, to both of your credit, have been also very mindful of the budget. It's been another issue that has been on a lot of people have been talking about it, you know, particularly with things that come up like $1.2 million of art out at the new water treatment plant. I know Becky Tuttle and I had went round and round about that the other day in a private conversation, not online. I won't have her come on the radio to talk about it, but we could debate that for hours. But this has to be very difficult for you, because I know at the one time you're trying to deliver core services, and at the other hand, you're dealing with a projected budget shortfall. Is this really what you signed up for? Is it what you were expecting?
No. So I knew about this budget deficit, and I've been trying to remind this community that we have priorities. They've asked me to promise that I will prioritize what the community really needs. They asked us about public safety. They want to know that there are officers when they call 911 that they will be available. So my focus has been on those core services, public safety, police, fire, public works. Now, when it comes to things like public bathrooms, like the $600,000 public bathrooms,
Portland potties,
the $1.2 million in public art for three pieces in front of the water treatment plant, I actually questioned all of those things.
I know you did.
Throughout this entire year, because I knew that we had a budget deficit that was right in the horizon. So therefore, that needed to be talked about. How can we reduce some of those things that are niceties while we need to focus on the needs? So again, it's needs versus wants. And I think that when we really ask the community, they want us to focus on the things that local government should be good at, which is providing that public safety, providing those safe streets so that you can get to work and to school.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the point that I tried to make with others of your colleagues, was the issues of need versus wants. It'd be different if you were sitting on a surplus. But when it's just like the way it works with a family budget, when times are tight, maybe you cut the cable bill, or you get rid of the premium channels, or you cut back on, you're buying skim milk instead of whatever. I mean, you know how it works. Honey, this week we can't do juice boxes. That's the way it works. You get a 6-pack of eggs instead of a 14-pack. That's how it works.
And not only that, so we work not just on the yearly budget, so it has to be balanced in order for it to pass. And I will remind the community that they asked me not to raise taxes. So therefore,
or your own paycheck,
vote,
by the way.
Yeah. And yes, I also voted. I wanted not to get that pay increase. So I voted in line with what I promised this community, and I'm trying to keep my promises. But we also have to be mindful that when we also talk about the budget, they also talk about the capital improvement project, which is 10 years worth of more capital intensive needs. In that conversation, we really need to focus more on maintaining what we have. And maintenance has not been the priority. Building new has been somewhat of the thing that other people have wanted. For me, it's about maintaining what we have. We have current assets. We have buildings that some are sitting empty. Let's take, for instance, the Central Library in downtown Wichita. So we need to be mindful that we need to take care of what we have first before we start building new. In addition, I think it's about collaboration moving forward. I really think that there are some opportunities between city and county, and we need to have better conversations between the two of us. And so I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to work with Chairman Beatty. And at that same time, it was Pro Tem Sarah Lopez and myself with Vice Mayor Ballard. The four of us have met on a monthly basis. And then moving forward next year, we'll meet with the new group. But I think it's those conversations to get us to more of the idea of sharing some services. MABCD is a great example. Construction details now come through both city and county in one building, versus back in the day, you had to go to two different parts of government. So I think that we have to start thinking more about sharing services and being more efficient as a government. So I'm really excited about what could come.
I'm up on my quarter break. Do you mind sticking around? We'll talk about what you're looking forward to next year. Well, you're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We're talking with Mayor Lily Wu. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. The folks at AFP believe freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity. AFP is a community of millions of concerned citizens just like you, advocating for solutions based on proven principles. Join them. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And don't forget, it's that time of year again. We're looking for sponsors for the John Whitmer Show. If you're interested, you can email Tony at KNSSradio.com. So, oh, and also don't forget, Saturday, December 28th, the Kansas Republican Party and the Estes campaign are having an end-of-year Christmas New Year's party. It's at 2 o'clock at the Estes campaign headquarters at Douglas and Webb. You'll want to come out. It's going to be a blast. Hors d'oeuvres, and it'll be a nice little party, a little holiday party to kick off your new year coming up on Saturday, the 28th. With us still is Wichita Mayor Lily Wu. So we're talking about the first of the year. What are your plans? What you're looking ahead? Obviously, set aside, we got a budget to deal with, but I'm sure you've got some things that you guys are looking to tackle in the new year. Can you give us a kind of a teaser?
Sure. Well, I'm really proud of this last year, working together with the council. I'm one vote out of seven, but I think we accomplished a few things when it comes to ensuring public safety. That was one of my number one campaign promises. I've worked really closely with the Wichita Police Department, specifically Chief Sullivan, who's doing such a great job in trying to recruit and retain officers. So in 2024, there were 46 new officers that joined the force with two graduations. So moving forward, we'll continue focusing on that, and I'll be very supportive of making sure that people understand what our officers' roles are and that we need to continue supporting them. When it comes to reduction in crime, been trying really hard with Councilmember Brandon Johnson and Councilmember Hoheisel with trying to figure out how to reduce crime in those areas. They have been data that shows that a lot of crime has happened in those areas, and youth crime in particular was on the rise at the beginning of the year. So we started something called Unity in the Community events to try to bring community together. That government can't solve everything.
No,
it has to be neighborhoods.
Right.
It has to be family members and nonprofits coming together to help reduce crime. And so moving forward, I see that also on the horizon. Then I'll move on to strengthening our economy. That was another campaign promise that I had, was really making sure that Wichita continues being visible as the air capital of the world. And I'm grateful that Senator Moran has been such a great ambassador for our community, making sure that everyone else outside of Kansas knows that our manufacturing here is top notch. Our workforce is really focused and great. So I'll continue focusing on that, working with them. Then really it's about restoring trust in City Hall.
You know,
it's about increasing transparency.
If I can tell you one thing on that, I had, just as an observation, as an outsider, I will tell you, this council, with you as the mayor, just the optics, the way you get, we haven't seen any paper being thrown over partitions, the jabs, the interaction, and you got, not to say that you have had an easy workload, because you've had record-setting meetings, you've moved to the evenings, which was, by the way, another campaign promise, so you've worked longer hours, you've had busier days. And yet, despite the workload, it seems like you're getting along better. You're more, the whole council seems to be getting along better. The camaraderie is there, even though you disagree. I mean, there's clear differences. Trust me, anybody who watches can tell. But it's more amicable. There isn't the sniping. There isn't the petty malarkey that we saw. And I think that starts at the top. That starts with the mayor. So kudos to you for at least bringing a little bit of statesmanship to that. It was well deserved. I made a comment in one of my carry-on commentaries last week. We significantly upgraded that office.
Well, thank you, John.
November.
I think that we have very spirited debates, and I think that that's where we need to get back to. In America, we can have disagreements on how we feel we need to be moving forward, but I think that when you see it from the bench, we have debate that is respectful at
right.
the end. We might not agree on everything, and that's okay. But we are very respectful of one another. And at the end, we take our vote, and then we move on. And then we try to work together on the next thing. So I think that you're seeing that from our bench, and I hope that that translates to the rest of the community, that we are elected to ask questions of staff. We will be challenging, but really it's about questioning bureaucracy
yep.
and holding them accountable. And as electeds, that's our job. And I think that when we know that that's our role moving forward, we'll continue asking questions, whether it's the parking agreements that have not been enforced since the 1990s to
right.
now. I will continue being community's voice, and I will continue listening to the people.
Well, and you know, other than the fire union, which, you know, by the way, that was a joke, and I'm glad that worked out the way it did. So I had never any doubt. Mayor Wu, thank you again for joining us. If folks want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Just contact me, lwu@wichita.gov.
Well, Merry Christmas. Thank you again. Stick around. We'll talk with former presidential legal advisor John Eastman. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Don't forget our carry-on commentaries. They air daily, three times a day, right here on KNSS. Listen for those. I record them just for you. There's some good ones coming out this week, by the way. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. Would love to hear from you. Well, back in June, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland rejected accusations by House Republicans that he had politicized the criminal justice system in a bid to stop Donald Trump from reclaiming the White House. In defiant testimony, Garland told lawmakers he would not allow politics to interfere with the Justice Department's independent criminal investigations. What a joke. And he accused them of peddling conspiracy theories. But judging by the results of the November elections, America just wasn't buying it. With us now to discuss lawfare versus justice in America is former presidential legal advisor John Eastman. He is a distinguished constitutional scholar, attorney, and former law professor with a career marked by deep commitment to upholding the principles of the Constitution. John, thank you for joining us this evening. Merry Christmas, and thank you for being with us tonight.
John, thank you for having me on the show, and Merry Christmas to you and everyone in your audience as well.
So it seems to me, John, that many Americans look at this and say that attorneys representing conservative clients are being unfairly targeted by a politically biased legal system. That, at least that's the way I've seen it. You don't see them, the FBI, the Department of Justice, you don't see them targeting liberals, but it does sure seem like they're going after conservatives. Am I wrong?
Well, having been on the receiving end of that lawfare, I don't think you're wrong at all. Look, in 2016, we had the biggest political scandal in our nation's history, funneling money through a Perkins Coie law firm to hire a foreign intelligence officer to create a false dossier
yeah.
to try and show that President Trump was, you know, a puppet of the Russians. It was completely false. And Adam Schiff, now U.S. Senator, Eric Swalwell,
who slept with a Chinese spy, by the
way. Yeah, they were involved in this up to their eyeballs. They used that false story to spy on their opposing political candidate. They continued to spy on him after he was elected, and then they continued to spy on him after he was inaugurated. This is the biggest political scandal in our history, and the only punishment that has been meted out is a slap on the wrist of one guy who actually doctored a document to get a FISA warrant. You know, the Department of Justice is already weaponized, and these claims that Trump is going to weaponize it are laughable. It's the greatest example of psychiatric projection I've ever seen.
Well, and frankly, this bias undermines public confidence in the whole system. I mean, you know, you've got Robert Ray, who's saying that he's going to quit the FBI when Trump comes in. Well, great, because frankly, we wanted you out anyway. But how sad is it that the American people have lost faith in the FBI, that we've lost faith in the impartiality of the courts? I mean, when Fannie Willis is sleeping with her employee and prosecuting, you've got Bragg up in New York prosecuting these completely bogus cases, and yet they're the ones pontificating about how they're, you know, the beacons of justice in the country.
Well, that's true. And I think one of the reasons they were trying so hard to keep Trump off the ballot, to keep him from winning, is because he learned enough in his first 4 years there to know where bodies are buried and know how the deep state operates. And he's not going to tolerate it this time. And look, you know, you've got a top official of the Department of Justice taking a downgrade in pay to go work for Alvin Bragg. Tell me that's not coordinated effort
right.
to go after Trump.
Right.
You had Nathan Wade, Fannie Willis's lover down in Georgia, who was paid $750,000 and then took her on lavish vacations, billing for a full day of meetings at the White House counsel's office, billing Fannie Willis's DA's office for work on the criminal prosecution against President Trump and me and Mark Meadows. And he says, well, those meetings had nothing to do with it. Well, that means he's violating his ethical rules and falsely billing. I mean, of course it had something to do with it. This was a coordinated conspiracy to try and keep Trump from the White House no matter what, deploying false criminal charges. It was a racketeering statute, a statute that was designed to go after the mob, treating the group of people, half of the country almost, who raised questions about the 2020 election as if it were a criminal enterprise. The obstruction charge brought against all the J6ers and against President Trump by Jack Smith, that was a mob witness intimidation statute that they distorted to try and go after President Trump as
right.
well as everybody else. I mean, they are distorting our law. They're violating the Fourth Amendment against general warrants. They're intruding on people's free speech and free petition the government for redress of grievances rights. They're trying to deprive people of attorneys to represent them in violation of the Sixth Amendment. I mean, they're just shredding the Constitution left and right. That's why this group out of Hollywood saw my story and said, we're going to do a documentary on this, and we're going to expose the lawfare that's going on so that the whole country can see it and put a stop to it. And the documentary premieres at Mar-a-Lago on January 4th. That's going to be great fun. And then it goes live January 6th for streaming on madisonmediagroup.org. And people can watch this thing. It's called Eastman Dilemma, Lawfare or Justice. And I hope everybody watches it. And I hope everybody starts pushing back against what we're dealing with. And by the way, we're not making this up.
No.
One of the leaders of the group, the 65 Project, is one of the, you know, the well-funded leftist organizations going after all the attorneys. And one of the leaders of it said, our goal is not just to get all of them disbarred, but to make them so toxic in their firms and their communities that they won't want to ever take on these kind of cases again. They're trying to prevent law firms and lawyers from representing conservative clients and causes.
Well, this is the same.
Think about what that means for the rule of law.
This is the same Justice Department that, you know, sent FBI agents after parents because they dared to speak up at school board meetings. So why? This shouldn't surprise anyone. We're talking with former presidential legal advisor John Eastman. John, so let's assume, thank goodness we won the election in November, or this would have just continued. In fact, I think under Kamala Harris, it would have only gotten worse. So I'm assuming that things will get better under the Trump administration. Are you pleased with the choices, for example, of Kash Patel to head the FBI, Pam Bondi to head the Department of Justice? Is that the first step in fixing all this?
Well, I think it is, and they need to be aggressive. They need to go in steeled for the onslaught of criticism that's going to come from the from the establishment media. I don't call them mainstream media because they're so disconnected from a mainstream America. That's hardly a right knower. The legacy media or the status media, better description. I'm also very excited about Harmeet Dhillon going to be head of the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice.
Right.
I'm anxious to see who gets named as head of the Criminal Division. I haven't seen that yet. I'm pleased with the pick for the White House Counsel. I'm very pleased with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy in running this Department of Government Efficiency. And then the team over at OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, that will actually be the people that have to implement their recommendations. And that's just a stellar group. Ross Voigt, Mark Papagna is the general counsel. Russ Voigt is the director and Ed Martin is the chief of staff. I mean, that's a powerhouse group. And I think they're going to go in with a mission to fix some of these problems.
Well, John, I appreciate you again for joining us this evening. Again, the documentary is called The Eastman Dilemma, Lawfare or Justice. If folks are interested, if they want more information, if they want to take a look at it, and of course, then once it's live, if they want to check it out, where's the best place for them to go to get some information?
So MadisonMediaGroup.org is where the information about the movie is. And then I have regular updates on what we're dealing with at my Legal Defense Fund site, and that is givesendgo.com/Eastman. People can help us with finances. They can send us prayers. But most importantly, they can read up there the updates we provide so that people know what's going on.
John, I appreciate you. It's a pleasure having you on the show, my friend. And, of course, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Thank you so much, Ed.
We'll take a quick break, and when we return, we'll review the recently released record-setting abortion statistics released by the state of Kansas with Danielle Underwood from Kansans for Life. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Americans for Prosperity believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. It's a great organization, a community of millions of concerned citizens just like you. If you want to get involved, if you want to make your voice heard, visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, earlier this month, after more than 6 months of stonewalling, the Kelly administration's Department of Health and Environment finally released the 2023 abortion statistics for Kansas. So, you know, sometime next year, around this time, we'll get the 2024 numbers, which will no doubt be stratospheric. It's worth noting that these statistics were intentionally held until after the election. Wouldn't want to impact those elections, after all. With us now to review the numbers is Danielle Underwood from Kansans for Life. Danielle, thank you for joining us this evening. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure to be with you, and Merry Christmas back to you.
So here's the headline, sad as it may be, Danielle. Kansas provided more, this is the headline from, sadly, the Topeka Capital Journal. Kansas provided more abortions in 2023 than ever before, mostly for out-of-state patients. And that was the headline. And you know, how sad is that?
It's heartbreaking. Yeah. 78% of those abortions were performed on out-of-state residents. And when we, you know, take a step back and we look at that overall number, sometimes it's hard to even wrap our minds about around what a number like that looks like. And I think, you know, for those of us, you know, thinking about it tonight, we can just, if you've ever been in Wichita's Intrust Bank Arena, or if you've ever been in Allen Fieldhouse, if you could imagine that stadium completely empty and see all those seats, you would then begin to really take in what that means. It's heartbreaking.
Wow, that's a so that's the number. The Interest Bank Arena with filled with empty seats, or conversely, the Interest Bank Arena filled with babies, living babies, if we could be.
Yes. Yeah. So that total number, right. So we're talking past capacity. We would be talking spilling out the doors and into the hallways and into the parking lot. 19,467 total abortions. So it is a really sad, heartbreaking number that, I mean, we knew this was coming. This is not a shock to us because, you know, we've seen some estimates going forward. Now we have the official stats, and this just shows us once again why it's so important that we have state statistics to tell us what's truly going on in our state. And, you know, the bottom line is that women deserve better than this.
Yeah.
They deserve better than to be exploited by a system that makes its money by putting their lives and their futures at risk and is just heartless for the lives of all of those lost children.
Yeah, a lot of people at Planned Parenthood getting rich off of this. And, you know, if you look at this, the 2023 figure represents a 53% increase from the number in 2022 and a 148% increase from the number in 2021. It's, and again, the report shows that less than a fourth of those patients who received abortions at Kansas clinics were in-state residents. So much like we were afraid back before, you know, the Value Them Both amendment, we have become, Kansas has become an abortion tourist state.
Yeah. Yes. But hope is not lost.
No.
You know, we're this is a hopeful season for us, and we've got to remember that the tide is turning. I do think, I mean, the last election showed us that Kansans still very much are supporting all of the legislators that have gone to bat for the last two legislative sessions.
Yep.
For those seven pro-life protections that we have been passing. Those are the things that were carefully drafted to be able to hopefully withstand our extremist activist state Supreme Court that has been, you know, wanting to dismantle all of these pro-life laws that we had previously passed. So, you know, we have to remember that we've got to keep moving forward. We've got to keep working to ensure that our state doesn't continue to be the abortion destination of the Midwest. And we can do that. We are not giving up hope. We know that there are, you know, some good things that are happening, and a lot of people are waking up to those misinformation campaigns that the abortion industry was so successfully running through not just our state, but a lot of other states that, you know, they came into with so many ads as different ballot different amendments were coming up onto people's ballots. And so many people had been misled by them for so long. And I do think that people are now waking up to how extreme their true intentions are, not just for our state, but really for our country.
No, and you know, one of the things that also in that Cap Journal article was the fact that there are three new clinics that have opened in Kansas, which sadly means that only, you know, these numbers are only going to go up. The abortion on demand industry is booming. And but you're right. There are good things on the horizon, and there's things that we can do about it. I know one of the things, you guys have some great new events at Kansans for Life, has some great new events coming up in 24, I know, or 25 rather. You've got the March for Life that is just around the corner. You've got the banquets both here in Wichita and in Kansas City, and a golf tournament, all of which is not too far. I mean, within 90 days or a couple, you know, 4 months, something like that, in 2025, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We've got a lot of things coming up. I think first thing is, you know, if you all are interested in this, if you are pro-life, you believe that, you know, we got to keep going. We got to keep with the progress we've been making, and we've got to continue to amplify that. We need to strengthen our legislators for this session ahead. Then you're going to want to come out on Wednesday, January 29th to Topeka and come to the March and Rally for Life. It should be an amazing day. I think it's going to be a very powerful event, hopefully even extra powerful. And we would love to have you come. It's going to be in the middle of the day. It's a great moment each year where we get to meet and greet all of these state legislators who are going to be going to bat for those pro-life protections. So exciting things ahead, and that'll be the first thing that you can do is to just take a day away from whatever else you have planned and come out and join this March and Rally for Life. Hopefully we'll have thousands of people out there, so you'll be in great company. And you can find all that information on our website at kfl.org.
That's what I was going to ask. I've been to that March for Life. It, you're right. There's usually a massive crowd, and it is like-minded individuals. But it's also a great way to reinforce your legislators. A lot of them are new. A lot of these folks are freshmen. They've got a good-sized freshman crowd, and they need that reinforcement. They need that reminder. You know, that keep in mind, folks, that those same legislators are also going to get the massive KNEA rally, the folks up there in their red shirts, and the Moms Demand Action folks up there in their orange shirts. So it's good for us to go up there as pro-life advocates and remind them about what's really important to them. So again, the March for Life coming up at the end of January. Give us that website one more time, Danielle.
You betcha. It's kfl.org.
Danielle, thank you again for joining us this evening. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule on a Sunday night, and want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, John. Back to you.
We'll take a quick break to pay a few bills, and then Bill Pasco from Tea Party Patriots Action will join us to discuss Joe Biden's attempt to sell off parts of the border wall. I knew they were desperate for money, but seriously? Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And as always, our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Well, President-elect Donald Trump has taken legal action to stop the Biden administration from selling off unused border wall materials. On Wednesday, Trump filed an amicus brief in the Southern District of Texas, urging a federal judge to halt the sale of surplus materials initially designated for the U.S.-Mexico border wall. With us now is Bill Pasco, Tea Party Patriots Action's spokesperson, to try and explain what the Biden administration might have been. Well, we know what they were doing. Bill, thank you for joining us. 2 weeks in a row. This is great. Is that Merry Christmas, brother. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Good to be with you again, John. How are you tonight?
Fine, thank you. So, I mean, maybe I'm just a bit of a cynic, but I find it hard to believe that this was anything but a naked attempt by the Biden administration to just make things harder on the Trump administration. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me this. It sure seems like they were just trying to basically screw over Trump.
John, will you listen with an open mind?
Yes, okay.
Of course you will. Of course you will, because we always have conversations where we're willing to look for the facts. That's the key.
Yes.
Okay. Everything that you just said is a reasonable interpretation if you're only looking at part of the picture. And unfortunately, I got to tell you, a lot of conservative audiences have only been given a part of the picture. And I'm going to explain very simply. If you look at a glass and there's water up to the halfway line on that glass,
right,
it would be reasonable to describe that glass as a glass that's half full. It would also be reasonable to describe it as a glass that's half empty.
Right. Yep. Yep. Okay. I'm a half full kind of guy, but.
Okay. I'm a guy who looks at that glass and says, well, that's a glass that's twice as big as it needs to be. Now. But here's the other side of the picture that you haven't been given and that may change your perception of what's going on here. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. The one big takeaway is that there's a big difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump when it comes to building a border wall. Trump is in favor of it. Biden was opposed to it.
Correct.
Trump spent 4 years in office trying to get the Congress to appropriate money to build a border wall. For the first 2 years of his first term, he had a Republican House that appropriated money to do just that. For the last 2 years of his first term, he had a Democrat House that would not do that. Then Biden came into office, And Biden's first 2 years were with a Democrat House that wanted to help him not build border wall. But then he had a 2 years of a Republican House that wanted him to build border wall, right? Okay, so that's our sequence of events. Here's the takeaway. Trump got a lot of money spent to construct the border wall, but they couldn't actually finish the border wall. He got about 455 miles of border wall constructed.
Right.
He was able to buy material for another 250 miles, but they didn't have time to actually construct all that border wall. So you've got supply depots full of tens of thousands of pounds of this steel bollard material that they used to make the wall. And that's in New Mexico, that's in Arizona, that's in Texas. It's all over the place. Biden comes in, and on the first day in office, because Biden is opposed to building any border wall, he signs an executive order that says stop all construction on the border wall immediately. Lay down your hammers and step off the ladders and everybody move away from the wall. Step away from the wall. 2 years later, Republicans take control of the House, and they look at the situation. They say, my God, we've got steel all over the Southwest that is just rusting because the Biden administration will not do anything with it. That's wrong. That's a waste of taxpayer dollars. We can understand they don't want to build border wall, but for crying out loud, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars, about $350 million worth of steel was left to rot and rust in the sun. So they passed a bill about a year ago now, the National Defense Authorization Act for 2024 contained a provision that told the Department of Defense, you're in charge of this stuff. We want to see plans, and we want to see plans within 60 days. I think the law said 60 days. We want to see plans to distribute or sell this material. Give it to the states. Give it to Arizona. Give it to New Mexico. Give it to Texas. They'll find a use for it.
Yeah, they'll build a wall with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because this is a Republican House, and that's exactly what they were thinking. You're exactly right, John. Give it to them, and if you can't give it away, then sell it. Well, they ended up giving away about 60% of the material. The other 40% they sold in the spring of 2024. Months ago, they sold it to an outfit called GovPlanet, which is a subsidiary of another company. It's a private company, in other words. So what we've been reading about, and this is where we get to the half full or half empty, it depends on your perception. What we've been reading about, there are auctions that have been taking place of the unused border wall material. Unfortunately, those aren't auctions that are actually being run by the U.S. government. They're auctions that are being run by this private company. Hmm. The government no longer has anything to do with this stuff. It sold the material. So we're now in a situation where the ultimate takeaway is the voters decided that they wanted border wall built. How do we know? Because that was one of the things at the very top of the list of things that you knew you were going to get if you voted for Donald Trump, and the
right.
majority voted for Donald Trump.
Exactly.
They spoke very clearly. So in less than 30 days, we're going to have a new president, and we're going to start building border wall again. That's what your listeners need to know.
And in the end, will they be getting this stuff back, do you think, or they'll have to turn around and buy it back?
I think they're going to get some of this stuff back, but I think we're going to have to buy an awful lot of border wall material all over again.
I mean, this is, and you know, sadly, this is typical of this administration and their attitude. I appreciate the explanation for all of this, but it also belies the thought process behind this administration. Well, we don't need a wall. We didn't want a wall. They wanted open borders, and that's what they got.
You're exactly right. And we need to remember, this is an example of the old axiom in Washington. Elections have consequences.
Yes. Yep.
You know, 4 years ago, Joe Biden got to sit in the White House, and he spent 4 years. He will have spent 1,460 days in the White House as president of the United States, and his policy rules ruled. And his policy was no border wall. We want to open borders. We want to let 10 million illegal immigrants come into the border and come across the border. And that's exactly what happened. We've never seen an influx like this. And I think it's fair to say that's at least part of why Donald Trump just won the election a month ago. Because people looked at that and said, holy smokes, we can't let that go on. We need border wall. Who's the guy who wants it? Oh, Trump. That's right. Yeah, I'm voting for that guy.
Bill, I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you again for joining us. If folks are interested, if they want to connect with Tea Party Patriots Action, what's the best way for them to find you?
on the web, teapartypatriots.org. Very simple, teapartypatriots.org. Good to be with you, John.
Yes, brother, I appreciate you. Thanks again. We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open. 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I couldn't help myself. Sorry. I just had to do it. Screw the woke. By the way, if you want to download that, you can get it off of my Twitter feed at John R. Whitmer on X.
John, that's number one with a bullet now.
Yeah, that's a goodie. Carry On Commentaries, our 60-second daily feature. Don't forget to listen to those. And don't forget the Sedgwick County Republican Party holiday end-of-the-year event coming up on Saturday the 28th from 2 to 5 at the Estes office at Douglas and Webb. If you'd like the information on that event, you can find that on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. So let me just share. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It came out it just came out this week, according to an explosive new report in the Wall Street Journal. The White House aides hid Joe Biden's apparent mental decline from day one of his presidency. The journal report reveals White House aides covered up President Biden's apparent mental decline from day one, shielding the aging commander in chief from exposure. A big shock here. According to the Wall Street Journal and this report, and it's bad, by the way, if you haven't read this, you really should, because it's pretty toxic. According to the journal, a national security official told, and this was under, of course, you know, condition of condition of anonymity. According to the journal, a national security official told an aide at the time, quote, "He has good days and bad days, and today was a bad day, so we're going to address this tomorrow." I mean, how sad is that? Yeah.
And so this starts with the aides, and then it bleeds into other parts of the administration. Your White House press secretary, who was fibbing to us.
Oh, fibbing. You're being nice. They've been flat out lying.
On a daily basis. And then you've got John Kirby. You've got
Karine Jean-Pierre and Kamala Harris, for that matter.
Yes.
Right. They've all been lying to us. And you know what's funny is for years now, Donald Trump has been blamed for, quote, the big lie. January 6th, I'm sorry, folks. This is the big lie.
Yeah.
This. That Joe Biden is mentally competent. That Joe Biden is fit for the office. This is the big lie. This has to be the greatest cover-up in political history.
It's amazing. This was happening to us in front of our own eyes. We saw it on a daily basis, from him getting on or off Air Force One, depending on which day it was, to his speech, to we all saw it. As the American people, we all saw it. However, the press
covered it up. Yeah.
Oh, no, you didn't see anything.
Yeah, don't believe your lying eyes.
Just keep walking.
Let's see. Meetings were often rescheduled for later in the day, a fact that was first disclosed after, obviously, the debate flop. It was hard to continue lying after that. President-elect, after the debate, when staff admitted then Democratic nominee of Joe Biden had difficulty functioning outside a six-hour window that closed around 4 p.m. daily. This is, again, all according to the Wall Street Journal. Once inside the room with the president, officials were instructed to make their briefings short and to the point. Private discussions with even some of his top cabinet picks, including Treasury Secretary and Defense Secretary, grew more infrequent. One cabinet official eventually stopped reaching out to schedule talks with the commander-in-chief after having been repeatedly rebuffed. I mean, how bad is that? A senior cabinet official just stops going to check in. So basically, they're just running the ship without him at that point. The White House also hired a voice coach, Hollywood mogul and campaign co-chairman Jeffrey Katzenberg, to try and improve Biden's faint, raspy tone, which I remember when he started whispering a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently that was as part of this. They wanted to help him, so they brought in a voice coach to help him. I mean, this is all. I mean, I have not read this the article, but I'm the New York Post has got a summary of it here, and that's what I'm reading from. But the signs have been there throughout the term in office. He was frequently relied on note cards, was spotted having large directions printed for him, markings on the floor so he knew where to walk, often mixed up the names of foreign dignitaries or other facts, and drifted, went off script, and ignored his teleprompter. I mean, it's, again, this what you were saying about this is nothing that we haven't seen, mm-hmm. but it's rare to actually have somebody, White House staffers, admit it, finally.
Amazing that we're getting this a month before he leaves office and not a month after he got into office.
Yeah, well, I wonder who's got a book coming out first. You know, because that's, you know, what yeah. what former White House staffer is going to, you know, get the first $1 million deposit in order to come up with a book on this thing.
I will say it's amazing that this was brought up in the Wall Street Journal of all news rags. The New York Post, I get that, but the Wall Street Journal is usually leans a little more left of center. So to have this come out, well, CNN has also started,
yeah,
saying a little bit more than we normally expect from CNN.
Well, so. They know he's gone. Yeah. They know the damage is done. There's nothing that can be done to save him. So, you know, throw out the trash. Mm-hmm. It's again, for me, what this comes down to is for years they've been talking, you know, and I guess, you know, to some extent, John Eastman mentioned it, the Russia hoax. There have been all these things that Trump was accused of lying about this, and Trump was accused of this and that and the other. They all pale in comparison to a president who, frankly, is incompetent and incoherent and unfit for the job, and yet you allowed him to serve for God knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see the movie Dave?
Yes. I love
great that movie. Great movie. For those of you who don't know the movie, the president's name is Dave. And the president, Dave whatever, has a serious debilitating heart attack. And so the White House staffers, before he had his heart attack, Dave was having an affair. And so what they would do is they would bring in this guy who runs a temp agency who looks just like the president to do walk-bys so that the president could sneak upstairs to sleep with his intern. Okay. Well, during one of these dalliances, he has a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So then in the movie, they bring in the lookalike to pretend to be the president so that they don't have to give up being president. Well, this is what this reminds me of.
It does, yeah.
It reminds me of the movie Dave, where his staff covered up for years. It's not an understatement to say years. We can't say 4 years, but we're at least looking at two, probably, where they covered up Joe Biden's mental incapacity in order to retain the reins of power.
Yeah, his cognitive deficiencies really started to show themselves in the last 2 years of his presidency.
Yeah, I would say that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he was always a little slow, mm-hmm. but you know, I mean, whatever. But certainly the last couple of years, as you saw the infrequent press access to the press, you know, he wouldn't do public appearances, wouldn't do interviews except with very, you know, straightforward media that were giving him underhanded pitches. So it's just very interesting. I'm really curious. I cannot wait for the first tell-all book to come out where somebody gets honest with people. So folks, we will be with you next Sunday, but in the meantime, have a very, very Merry Christmas and just have a very safe holiday. Enjoy your Christmas gatherings, and we'll be here next Sunday, regular time.
Hey, hey.
Looking forward to. All righty. Merry Christmas. Enjoy family time with family.